Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Toe Meets Leather podcast. I'm here today, as always, with Nigel and Andrew. How are y'all doing this afternoon?
Doing good. Watching Ben Simmons put in work.
Oh, yeah. College basketball time. I'm hoping he makes the finals. He's got to be the top guy right now. Oh. I'm not drunk. Anyway, let's move on. Nigel, we've had a lot of movement in the coaching carousel so far, coming into the off season. Why don't you give us the latest updates on that?
I mean, right now, you know, South Carolina finally decided to settle on, you know, Will Muschamp. I think that was very important. I don't know how well that really is as a fit. I mean, basically, he's been to three SEC schools in the span of 3 years. He went from Florida being the head coach. He went to Auburn to be defensive coordinator for a year. That was met with mixed results. Obviously, he was only there a year, wasn't able to fully get his recruits there, probably would fit his system as well. And now he's going to be the head coach at South Carolina. I think in South Carolina, they're getting a guy who at least has head coaching experience, a guy who had worked in the SEC. His learning curve won't be as high, even though he wasn't as successful in his first stint as a head coach in the SEC. But I think he's a guy who's going to work hard. He's obviously passionate. That's never been questioned about him. And I think it's going to be interesting to kind of see what he does and how he adjusts to the SEC. He's obviously in the weaker half of the conference where he's been for. And we'll see. We'll really see. I feel like Florida is definitely going to be the team to beat on that side of the conference, which is surprising, you know, him being a year removed from there. And it'll be interesting. It'll be very interesting what he does and brings to the table.
The spark up some extra rivalries. Andrew, we got some good news on your boy Tololo in Navy. Why don't you give us an update on that?
Well, it looks like Kenny's going to stay at Navy, which is great for the midshipmen, especially with them losing Reynolds and having a lot to replace going into next year. I want to jump back. The Muschamp hire screams panic hire to me. It screams that South Carolina had higher guys on their list. They either didn't get them or they went somewhere else, and they started to panic. That is what that hire absolutely... The East Carolina hire screams the same thing to me, which that's going to look back and probably be the worst mistake all year is East Carolina firing Ruffin McNeil. That's just awful. I have no idea why they would have done something like that. And then to hire Scotty Montgomery, who, I mean, he's been the offensive coordinator at Duke, but their offer really has a lot to write home about.
Yeah, I think that's true.
One of the biggest things – sorry, Nigel – was Maryland ended up hiring DJ Durkin, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think the biggest thing.
Let me double check that. Did he go to Rutgers or did he go to?
I could have sworn he went to Maryland.
I'm honestly, I can't remember because it's Maryland. It's Maryland.
I think the biggest thing that's going to help him is that he was able to keep Mike Boxley, who's known as a really strong recruiter in the Maryland area and across the board, as well as he brought in Mike London, former UVA coach, as his defensive line coach, which we've all seen the ability London had to recruit at Virginia. And I think that's definitely going to help Maryland kind of spread down into the 757 and Newport News and some of those Virginia areas and pluck out some of that talent. I think that was an amazing hire, as well as Bronco Mendenhall hiring Ruffin McNeil as one of his assistants at Virginia. I think that's going to be a hire that shows a lot of dividends in the recruiting battles. The guy that I get why he's so highly talked about, but really I kind of question how great he's going to end up being is Justin Fuente at Virginia Tech. I think it might end up being a decent hire, mostly because they were able to keep Bud Foster And so that Virginia Tech defense isn't going to have a lot of turnover and is still going to be able to play the scheme that these guys have been in for a couple years. And to me, Foster is one of the best defensive minds in the game. I mean, he's really, really good at what he does. And I think that was the biggest win for them. But Fuente, to me, you know, it'd be interesting to see what he does. They just got to commit from, I believe, the top junior college quarterback in the country is going to be coming in to Blacksburg to play for them next year. So it'll be interesting to see how he goes on in the post-Paxton Lynch era. Because if you look at his early years at Memphis, yeah, he was trying to build the program up, but he still didn't do great until his last 2 years when he had Lynch really turn it around. And it's going to be interesting to see as he makes the step up to the P5 level, especially in a coastal now that has gone out and made some dynamite coaching hires in Mendenhall at Virginia, Mark Richt at Miami, you know, to go with the Narduzzi at Pittsburgh, Cutcliffe at Duke, Johnson at Georgia Tech. You know, you've got some amazing coaches now in the coastal that's going to take a division that had tons of parity and hopefully make it even better.
Definitely true. And that's, the key will be, and Andrew, I really think this is an early Christmas present for a guy like you who's talking about the coastal is stronger than people are giving it credit for. A lot of articles that I read that the ACC has won the early offseason battle by the hires that they were able to make in terms of coaching, as you stated. And I think in the first few weeks of 2016, if we can get some key wins, if we can make some noise in the non-conference schedule, I think it's going to set the ACC, not only the coastal, but the entire conference, you know, just take those steps that we need to get more national recognition.
But the big one's going to be North Carolina, Georgia, in the Chick-fil-A kickoff in what will be Kirby Smart's first game as a head coach at Georgia. And more than likely, Jacob Eason's first start as quarterback, too. That'll be a big game. If North Carolina can win that game, that'll definitely set the Coastal up to gain a little more respect and maybe have some people finally start to see the strength and parity that exists in the Coastal.
Definitely. And by the way, kudos to Kirby Smart, because I think that was the first big move that he needed to make, not had to make. I think he needed to make, and that was keeping Jacob Eason at Georgia committed. I didn't think it was going to happen, just because if he had followed Rick to Miami, obviously he would have sat behind Brad Kaya. Brad Kaya going into his third year, would have been his third year as a starter. Obviously very talented. He's put up consecutive 3,000-yard passing seasons. I think Eason doesn't have as clear a path to the number one gig at Miami as he would have had at Georgia. As much as Grayson Limerick's making good-natured ribbing, saying he can't wait to compete, it's Eason's job to lose right now.
Yeah, especially with Eason coming in the spring and having a chance to compete through spring ball and get the playbook and get some early reps. You know, Georgia's spring game is going to be insanely attended this year because of that. I think the biggest thing that really helped Kirby Smart, which is another great assistant hire, is hiring Jim Chaney from Pitt. We saw what Jim Chaney could do after James Conner got hurt with a very, you know, two tight end, two back system, you know, very run heavy, hit you in the mouth. You know, like you see in Michigan State, like you see in Iowa, like you see a lot of these, and you see extensively in the NFL. I think that was a great hire on Smart's part of bringing in a guy that's got that kind of pedigree to come in and not really change a lot of the offense in its traditional sense. Because he would have lost Eason if he had gone out and hired a spread guy.
Oh, yeah. No, definitely. Because Eason probably half the reason he went to Georgia. And the thing that's going to help Brad Kaya so much is because Mark Richt is, and correct me if I'm wrong, he says he's going to get more into the play calling again. He's going to become the offensive
coordinator. I believe he was the offensive coordinator for his first couple of years, as well as he called the plays. So I think he's going to want to get back to.
I think that's going to help Brad Kaya leaps and bounds prepare for the next level. And you're right, Easton's like, his mind is on 3 years from now. not just next year. He wants to prepare, like kind of like a Matthew Stafford. I want to make noise and be on the NFL radar from day one.
Stafford never won an SEC title. I don't believe he ever won an Eastern Division title.
Which is crazy. Well, not really that crazy from results we've seen so far. That's my quarterback. And speaking of Mark Richt, I think the effect he has had on Miami's recruiting is pretty evident in the early running. He's got two four-star recruits already at Miami. They moved up a level in ESPN. They moved up two or three levels in a couple other recruiting blotters. I really don't like to look at class rank. I just know he's getting quality guys. One of the guys that he actually got to commit was the son of an alumni of Miami. So he's got those alumni kind of invested again. They're excited. And I think it's at a perfect time where you have a lot of the alumni who, from that era of the U, they're children at this age kind of coming, get ready for the college ranks. And I think when you have a fan base excited again, I think that almost eliminates that question mark of how far the stadium is from school. Like, obviously, that's always going to be a factor. But if people are excited and you're winning games, I guarantee that distance doesn't seem as long as it is right now.
Yeah, I think that's probably, in my opinion, the best hire of the offseason so far was them being able to hire Richt. And if you look at it, looking at Miami's recruiting, 24/7 is really, in my opinion, probably the better of the recruiting ranking sites. I mean, it's like picking which one's the shiny bird, but I think 24/7 does a good job. I mean, Miami's got a top 20 ranked class, and I bet that he will definitely be able to keep a lot of those guys together. Plus, they've had some talent. You look at some of their young talent last year. Mark Walton, that running back, really impressed me from what I saw all year. You know, I think they're going to be a little younger at wide receiver. I'm not sure exactly what they have on defense, but yeah, I think he's just a dynamite hire down there, because I think he gets the best part of a guy like Randy Shannon, who has those deep ties to the U. Mm-hmm. But I think he's a little different of a coach, as well as he's not having to clean up the same kind of mess that Randy Shannon was tossed into.
True. Or Al Golden. Al Golden.
Yeah.
You know, for him, I think Al Golden had a little bit of that backlash too.
Well, the thing that saved Miami in that investigation was the fact the NCAA just botched it all to hell.
Yeah. No, definitely. I think, you know, and that's the thing, is that this will be the first time I think a Miami coach will be able to come in with a really clean slate in a long time, and I think that will help. I think Rick's success at other places will help. You know, he's been at Florida State. He's been at Georgia. He's a guy who's had success at the stops he's went to. And the thing is, too, and as we stated before, don't fire an 8 in search of a 10. If Mark Richt goes to Miami and gets 10 wins every year, Miami's set. They will.
Oh, yeah.
They will put up a statue of him. 10 wins every year for Miami. The 10 wins every year to me is, depending on who you lose to, and I guarantee you, he's going to play a rough schedule at Miami, because he won't be doing. He's so used to playing quality opponents. I think that's what he's going to definitely miss the ledger. I think, depending on who you lose to, that could be a top 25 team every year, just because you're Miami. You have the name. You have the resources. You're going to be playing quality opponents. I think that's a top 25 team every year.
I think the thing to me on it is Miami will create some of the same kind of issues that he ran into at Georgia. I think the biggest thing that really hurt him, a couple of the biggest things that really hurt him at Georgia, were all the coaches around him winning national titles and him not doing it. And he's a victim of, you know, talking about recruiting rankings and all that. Recruiting rankings really played a huge role in Mark Richt and his job. Because if you don't have the commercialization and recruiting rankings that are treated like the golden rule, then I don't think it. I don't think he's gone, because everyone started pointing out, hey, he's got these top 10, top 15 recruiting classes. Why is he not winning national titles? You know, the whole idea of he's squandering all this talent because of stars on a page by people that, if recruiting, if the people that work for recruiting were as good at their job as the general fans thought, someone would hire them.
True.
You know, some staff somewhere would hire him as them as a player personnel director or something, because they would have shown they were really good at it. It's the same thing with the NFL draft experts on ESPN and all the websites. If they were that good, they'd be in a front office somewhere as an assistant GM.
Are you calling out Mel Kiper right now?
No, Kiper's actually an interesting one, because Kiper's been doing it for like 30 years. So, and Mel Kiper, true, he's wrong about as much as he is right anyway. But
true.
You know, recruiting is just recruiting. Like I said, it's become such a huge commercial entity between all the different websites, between ESPN making a huge deal out of it. You know, and to me, it is. Well, and it becomes another way to justify my school's better than yours because we got XYZ five stars. You know, which to me, stars aren't completely meaningless, but they don't also hold and carry the weight like a lot of people want them to.
Yeah,
you know, I think you need to trust your staff.
Yeah, goes back to the J.J. Watt argument. You don't know who, you know, and look at people like J.J. Watt. Look at people like Carl, was it Nesbo out of Penn State?
Yeah.
There are certain players who are what they are when they come out of high school, but there are so many people who in 4 years develop into this thing that people never thought possible just because they have the drive, they work hard, they find that guy or that system that just fits them perfectly, and then they just take off from there. So, you know, you just don't know. You're right, it's not a perfect science, you know, and it's all about finding the people that fit you and do what you need them to do in your system. Interesting development for me, and something I saw, was Oregon getting another FCS quarterback transfer this year. Potentially, it's not.
The interesting thing to me about that, sorry to interrupt you again, Nigel, is that everyone wanted him. Alabama had him in for a visit. I mean, are you kidding me? You're the University of Alabama. You've had the number one or two recruiting class every year for the past 6 or 7 years. And you're telling me your best option for a quarterback is an FCS transfer?
Yep.
I mean, you talk about the cupboard being bare, or your coach is not doing a great job. They've signed 4- and 5-star quarterback. You know, they've signed guys. You know, they brought in Jay Coker. They've got Cooper Bateman. They've got all these highly ranked 4-star quarterbacks, but apparently None of them are good enough, so they're out here trying to shop this 1 year graduate FCS transfer. I mean, come on! You're the University of Alabama, for crying out loud.
No, and that's the discussion I wanted to have, is that this happens every year where we have all these power schools getting all these transfers, and because they're like, well, you know, we just want to bring in people to, you know, to strengthen the competition, and I'm like, is that really it? Is that you bring people in to strengthen competition? No, because either you signed a guy 3 years ago who turned out not to be the guy you thought he was going to be, and you signed him too early because you're who you are. You got the benefit of the doubt, and people gave this guy a 5-star when he was in 9th grade, and so you latched on to him, and some of these guys just don't develop. Or your coaches aren't, like you said, aren't developing the guys to the fullest extent that they should be. And I think it's ridiculous that, you know, you just see all the quarterback play is still one of the most important positions in college football, and it happens time and time again. And, you know, no offense to anybody out there, but the SEC seems to be the biggest culprit of not being able to develop quarterbacks, and I don't get it.
Yeah, I'm not going to defend Alabama because they've never been good at recruiting quarterbacks. Of course, their offensive system doesn't really need it, but they've never been good at recruiting quarterbacks. Also, though, I think a lot of it is, at a certain point, because Alabama's got would have three options at quarterback at that point. A lot of it might just be, well, we want that guy, but what we really want is to make sure nobody else gets that guy. You know, that can play a factor at a certain point. Now, go ahead.
Yeah, you're talking about Nigel. You're saying, you know, bringing guys in for competition. Unless all of the quarterbacks in your quarterback competition are freshmen coming off a redshirt or sophomores, you've had them in school for 2 or 3 years. You've seen what they can do. You've hopefully given them opportunities in mop-up games to play just to get on the field. Yeah, I mean, you get it, Georgia. Everyone, when they brought in Grayson Lambert, was like, why this guy wasn't very good at Virginia. He didn't make a lot of plays. He threw a lot of interceptions at Virginia. Why are you bringing him in? And we're going to build the competition. And then he comes in and wins the job.
Yep.
I mean, that shows that you've made mistakes in your recruiting. You've missed, which, you know, recruiting is a crapshoot. You're going to miss on guys. But sometimes you look back and you wonder, all right, you're Fatale Bauta, the guy that started the Florida game for him. Why, as Mark Richt, if you run the same style offense every year you've been there, do you bring in a dual threat guy? That's not what you want to do on offense. It's not your strengths on offense. So why are you going to waste a scholarship on a guy like that? And then you kind of throw him to the wolves against Florida.
Oh, yeah, you did. Absolutely. He was not put in a position to succeed. I don't get it. I really don't. Where the development is, constantly gets away with it because they recruit. And no offense, you know, once again, if it works, it works. I'm not going to hate on you for it working. You know, the SEC does one thing really, really well, and that's line play. It's not quarterback play. It's not even running back play. And, I, you know, no offense to all the great running backs in the SEC. The SEC does line play better than everybody else. That's why they win, because the big uglies on both sides of the ball are 9 times out of 10.
Yeah.
And that is the difference. That's the difference to me every time I look at the games, is that the SEC's offensive line and defensive lines are just head and shoulders above. Because, and you know, all the kudos in the world go to Nick Saban. He recruits linemen like me and you collect, you know, what do you want to say? Random thing that we collect. I can't even come up with anything. But I mean, he's so good at it. He knows what he's good at, and he can all you got to do is walk into a guy who's 6'5", 330 pounds, whose mama can't afford to feed him, and say, "Hey, ma'am, I'm going to get your son to the NFL. Look at all these guys I put in the NFL," and he wouldn't be lying.
Well, I mean, that to me is the key starts up front. You know, I mean, you want to look at a perfect example of bad offensive line play torpedoing a season. Go and look at Georgia Tech. I mean, where the offensive line play was just garbage. And when you're not able to do that, you can't even attempt to run your offense if you can't protect, if you can't get push on the run. You know, if you guys aren't getting to the second level to cut off the linebackers, you know, it becomes a mess. And your offense completely bogs down.
Well,
I mean, every time Justin Thomas snapped the ball and it was running for his life 5 seconds later.
Well, my question, and I guess this goes to both of you, is what do you do for that? I mean, development's a whole different issue because there's coaching and everything involved with that. But who do you recruit to go into your offense for linemen? What are you looking for exactly? Because it's not something that's very easy to judge at that point. And you can make the argument for any position, but for linemen, it's kind of like you're big and you're strong and maybe technique, but it's really a hard thing to gauge at that point. Is it the system they run? Is it just...
For offensive line, the biggest thing is you've got to know what you're looking for in the system you're trying to run. Yeah. Different systems look for different things in their offensive linemen. You're going to want a big guy who's flexible. You know, you're going to want a guy who can come down low off the ball. You know, because if you've got an offensive lineman that as soon as the ball snapped, he stands up, he's going to get killed. Because one of the biggest keys to offensive line play, especially in the run game, is leverage. It's being able to drive, get under your guy, press his pads, and get leverage. And yeah, it's great to have a big 6'6", 330 guy that can do that, but there aren't very many that size that can move like that. And I think that's one of the big things is you start looking at guys that are big and can move. You know, and sometimes you got to go with slightly smaller guys that can move. I remember getting in an argument one time with a wonderful Georgia fan. They were playing Boise State a couple years ago, and the center for Boise State was like 6 foot, 290. I mean, not a big guy.
For a lineman.
And their nose tackle was like 6'6", 330. And all this guy could talk about is, oh, he's just going to manhandle that center, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, no, the thing about it is it's going to be about leverage. And I guarantee you that smaller center is going to be able to get under the pads of that nose guard and get movement because he can come out faster and he got better leverage. And that's exactly what happened. You know, good feet, quick hands. There's a lot of keys to offensive line play. It's a very technique-heavy position.
You know, I mean, Saban's good. Saban's good at what he does. I mean, look at the success he's had defensively and line play. I mean, that's what they build themselves on. That's why his offense is what it is and why Alabama going to any remnants of the spread in the past 2 years with Lane Kiffin doesn't actually work for them. It doesn't shorten the game like it does. Like, Derrick Henry this year has been the defense's best player because he shortens the game. He's going to pound the rock. You know, he's going to get first down. He is a Nick Saban staple to have a running back that can, you know, chew the clock up, and it's dependable. And as Andrew stated, I remember when Jake Coker left to Florida State to go to Alabama. You would have thought the second coming had been announced formally and that Alabama was just going to win the next three national titles in a row.
Oh, I remember. And I remember my family actually talking about that. Yeah, it really was. We thought we had Jameis Winston the second or someone equivalent. There was no stopping him. He was going to win the Heisman. We were going to win all our games by 50 points. And look, and Nigel finished my statement.
I mean, he got on the field this year, his last year of eligibility. He's been adequate. Them against Michigan State is going to be interesting because Michigan State has the line play that I think maybe not quite on par with Alabama, but we'll definitely give Alabama a run for its money. If they decide to play one-on-one on the outside and gear against the run, and Derrick Henry can't get going, and Derrick Henry is a man, a grown-ass man, but if he can't get going, what does Alabama do? Do you think Jake Coker can beat Michigan State, even their corners, one-on-one? They don't have a wide receiver like an Amari Cooper who can just get open anytime he wants. So that's gone. So who? I don't even know Alabama's wide receivers.
They've got a great name for the future in Cameron Ridley or Calvin Ridley.
I mean,
he might be good, but is he get separation all day every day, 10 yards? Because I remember Amari Cooper was getting like 5-10 yards of separation from his guy. So if you missed him, it was on you.
We're kind of getting off topic. This is definitely a topic we're going to talk about down the road because we want to get on the playoffs. But yeah, to answer your key question, Coker has not been what we expected of him. We expected him to be the big playmaker on offense to really break in that spread offense that Lane Kiffin brought to the system. And clearly he has not delivered because they've gone more back to the pound the rock game, especially with Henry. And a lot of that has to do with the way Henry is built and his ability to just carry the ball over and over again. But as far as Coker goes, I don't know if it's development. I don't know if it's just that they were expecting something out of him and he really was more of a, like a golden, you know, out of Florida State and he just didn't measure up the way that they thought he would. But it's not something that he delivered on. And I think This has always been the crux for Alabama and for a lot of schools is recruiting quarterbacks. There's not a great guideline for it at the end of the day. I mean, winning games is the one that I would go by the most, and that's also something that's hard to judge. Andrew, you're the most experienced with those with that kind of thing. We already talked about O-line. What do they look for with quarterbacks?
I think it's the same thing. I mean, you have to know in your scheme what you want the guy to be able to do. What are you looking him to do? What is the main skill sets that this kid has to have in order to be successful in your offense? And part of being a great offensive coordinator to me is being able to tailor your system a little bit as well. So you recruit a kid that fits most of what you're looking for, but not necessarily all of it. So you need to make sure to utilize the things you have in your system to put him in a place to be successful. In terms of recruiting high school quarterbacks, the only position, in my opinion, that's more of a crapshoot than quarterbacks is kickers. That's just because kickers are head cases. But with quarterbacks, you never know really what you're going to get. Until you get the kid on campus, you get him in your playbook, and you really start to see what are his habits. Because to me, a great story that I always loved is one of the guys that I worked for. We were sitting and talking one day, talking about one of his previous stops, and he made a comment about they play a game on Saturday, and he'd come in Sunday to watch the game tape, and his starting quarterback was already sitting in his office waiting on him to get there. Because quarterback is one of those positions where you've got to put in a ton of film work to be successful. I mean, it's one of the things that's made Peyton Manning and Tom Brady as great as they are. Yeah. You know, because you've got to have a guy that A, knows what he's looking for, which is lots on the coach. Because I think a lot of times coaches will get caught up in, all right, this kid needs to watch tape, and not necessarily sit down with him and say, all right, when you're watching the film, this is what you need to look for. This is what you need to be paying attention to. You know, see how the safeties line up when they're playing too high. See how this does that. And that's really what you've got to start getting guys to be able to look for, because the biggest thing is if you can identify something early, you can check and you can play with it. Now, obviously, you know, it's always a chess match of movement and all of that. And it's a really interesting. I was watching the Army-Navy game, and I saw something that Army's defense did that was really fascinating to me, and has always surprised me that it's not something you see much against our style or Navy style offense. Is Navy would come to the line, check the play, get ready, just about to snap the ball, and Army would slide the defensive line. The moment you move that defensive line, you've completely erased all of the previous offensive line calls. And you saw it a couple of times where Reynolds would have to step back out, get his count, get his set again, and recall the offensive line. Because that's one of the things, if you can confuse them, especially in our offense where a lot of it is the offensive line identifying the front, identifying the dive key, the pitch key if we're running certain plays. And you can mess that up, or you can muddle up those calls, then you're going to have a lot of success. And it was interesting to see that Army was able to have that kind of success against Navy. And then, I mean, I could do a whole podcast on the Army-Navy game.
Why don't you?
And you think that came because with that Jeff Monkey up there?
I think a lot of it did. I think when you've got a guy who has the experience coaching the offense, he's going to know a lot of the other ways to deal. He's going to know what gives the offense trouble and what gives the offense fits. It's kind of, you go back and watch, Georgia Tech played Air Force in the 2010 Advocare Independence Bowl in beautiful Shreveport, Louisiana. And the game was 14-7, and neither offense really was able to get much rolling because you had two staffs that were very, very experienced in that style of offense.
Yeah, no, it's definitely something to, you know, and I was, you know, making a quick comment on that game. I was very impressed with Army. Army seems to have found a QB, I think, going forward, that's going to have a lot of success in that system. I'll be interested to see how Army does going forward, not only in the rivalry, but also in general.
I think that's definitely enough. That quarterback they found, I think he's got a chance to be a pretty good player for them. As well as Edgar Allan Poe, the wide receiver, was a great guy to come in and make some plays and get some things done. It was interesting to see. One of the things that I noticed a lot, especially really for Navy, is Navy really sold out a lot on offense, where they ran, it's a formation called heavy, where you move one of the tackles over and you play a wide receiver as the tackle on the back side, which you run a lot of plays out of it. But Navy really, really did a lot of damage where they ran that, and then they tightened down the other wide receiver. And so the backside wide receiver who was lined up as a tackle, who is an eligible player and an eligible receiver, would run a deep crossing route with the other tight wide receiver, and Army didn't have an answer. They kept losing one of the crossers, and it's an easy throw when you can see it.
And also, by the way, you made mention of it. When they said Edgar Allan Poe, I was like, why are we talking about poetry during the game? And then I realized someone had literally named their child Edgar Allan because his last name was Poe. And I nearly lost it, because that's one of those things that most people wouldn't have done, and they just seized the opportunity. I thought it was beautiful.
I think another interesting contrast was if you look at the B-backs. Navy's B-backs, Ezeal and Swan, were 6'1", 6'2", 235, 240. They're pretty good-sized boys. Army's starting B-back was 5'8", 215. He was 5'7". He was a short, stumpy, thick guy, and he ran well. It was exciting to see him just get the ball and pop out of the backside because everybody had forgotten where he was.
Yeah, that can happen with the shorter guys. I mean, if the line's big enough. You know, obviously with Army and Navy, there are going to be some restrictions on size. But if the guy's small enough or the line's big enough, those little guys will pop out from there like almost like a gerbil and just scamper away. It's fucking hilarious.
Well, and they just lose him in the trees, I guess, is one way. Now, I'm hoping we call his name a lot more. That's one of the great names of all time, right up there with Milton Bradley and Coco Crisp. Those are baseball names, I know, but I just love... I love it when people get creative with the names.
I'm a big fan of two brothers that both started at safety for Navy, Blaze Ryder and his older brother Wave Ryder.
Oh my!
So we're both starters at Navy.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. Sometimes parents are like, I'm setting you up for success. You just don't know yet.
or one of my, another really amusing one to me is there's two brothers that play at Cincinnati. They're from Norcross. One of them's a defensive lineman. His name is Silverberry Mujan. And then his younger brother's name is Kevin.
So his parents tried it. And you're like, that's beautiful.
I feel like Kevin is short for something in that scenario. They wanted to name him something really big, but they, at the end of the day, they're just like, no, it's easier to pronounce Kevin. Okay. Well, I want to move us on to our last topic for the day. We're talking about potential NFL draft picks. Now we're actually getting to a point of the season where we can sort of identify which teams are going to have which positions in the draft. Obviously, not everything's locked up, but we can tell who needs what and where they might end up. And last time we talked about this, we ended up talking about the Lions for like 30 minutes. So, Nigel, if you don't mind, I'd like to cut down on the talk with that. Right now, though, it looks like the top five picks are going to go to Tennessee, the Browns, the Chargers, the Ravens, and Barbie's Cowboys. One of our friends, if you know who we're talking about.
Nigel, one special team.
Go for it.
I want to add the Raiders.
The Raiders, I think, are at 17 right now. What do they need? Nigel, I'll start with you because you've done your research. The Raiders are going to need something to get over the hump, but they're not going to win 500 this year, okay? They're not going to get to 500. Nigel, what do these top five teams need?
The Raiders are actually pretty well set on the offensive end of the ball. They just locked up Michael Crabtree. They have Amari Cooper. They have a good young tight end out of Miami, Walford. Are set at running back, I think, in the at least for now. Obviously, they're set at QB. I think what they need to do is attack the defensive side of the ball. If they go after a good linebacker like Mike Jack, I think he'll be available in that 15-17 range. Or if they go after a good corner, maybe not Hargraves. I don't think he'll be available around 15 or 17. But maybe a kid out of LSU. I wrote his name down. The kid out of LSU.
Tre'Davious White.
Yes. I think either of those, just a good corner, were good for them. A guy who could probably work under Charles Woodson for a little bit and just learn how the game actually works a little bit. I think that would be a good pickup for them. Because along the line, I think they're pretty well set. We all saw Khalil Mack. He's on the linebacking level, but he's obviously going to make noise. Alden Smith will be back next year, sometime next year. And they have Mario Edwards out of Florida State, who's, getting a little bit more playing time with Alden. He has shown that he's not too fazed by what's going on. I don't think there'd be a good defensive line available around 15 or 17. So if they can pick up a linebacker or corner, or trade down a little bit, maybe pick up another second rounder, I think they'd be really well off.
I think that's a fair point. It's not any of the teams we mentioned except for yours, but I think that's a fair point.
The Raiders! Good. I'm telling you, dude.
Andrew, do you want to talk about Tennessee, the Browns, the Chargers, the Ravens, or the Cowboys? Or let me guess, do you want to talk about the Cardinals?
I already know the Cardinals, A, they're going to have the 32nd pick in the draft, and I already know who they're going to take, so it doesn't really matter. I think the Titans are going to go defense. I think Joey Bosa is definitely the big name on the board. They've got some young talent on offense, especially with Mariota. They've got some decent young wide receivers in Justin Hunter and Doral Green Beckham. They could use some help at running back. I'm not sold on Bishop Sankey, but you don't take a running back with your number one overall pick. There's not a – outside of Barry Sanders, Jim Brown maybe, O.J. Simpson, any of those guys you might take, Jair Dickerson. But I don't see any of those running backs in this draft.
Are you suggesting they won't take the Heisman Derrick Henry?
Derrick Henry will not be the first running back off the board. You can mark that down right now.
I agree.
For everybody.
I agree.
I don't think Henry is the type of guy who can develop well in the NFL just because he's a hard worker and he gets a lot of downs, but he doesn't have the technique yet. But anyway, you were finishing your thought.
He's also a man amongst boys, and when you get to the NFL, you're playing with grown-ass men.
That does change things a bit when you have to play with people on your level or above your level.
For Cleveland, they might as well just fold that team, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
But I think they probably want a quarterback because we all see the signs point to the Johnny Manziel experiment being over. Mm-hmm. The issue is if they have the number two pick in the draft, I don't think any of the quarterbacks in the draft are worth that.
Paxton Lynch? Lynch, man.
Lynch won't be the first quarterback off the board.
Ooh, shots fired again.
Who you got Mark then? Jared Goff?
Yep. Ugh. I don't agree with that either, but you will be.
Paxton Lynch is so big, though.
You know, Cleveland, I don't know. Cleveland will find a way to screw it up, and they'll probably take Derrick Henry.
I can't wait.
Again? Alabama running back again?
I don't think they'll trust him after what Trent Richardson did to him. Oh.
I think San Francisco, who is also terrible, will probably go defense. I think this is where you might see a guy like Vernon Hargreaves come off the board.
You don't think they'll go like offense? I think they're good at running, but I think Hyde, obviously Hyde's been hurt, but when he was playing, he was good. I think maybe they go defense. Because remember, their line and linebacking core are almost shot outside of
Everyone retired.
Yeah. Well, everybody retired and like, oh my God, I like my brain, or my body's destroyed, or something like that.
Yeah, so I mean, I think they go defense. I think Hargreaves is a good one, or even a guy like, you know, I don't know. Jaron Clemson, one that's really interesting to me, is a big pocket safety who could probably come in the box and play linebacker.
Shaq Lawson. I wonder if he'll probably go later, though.
Yeah, Lawson will be a guy. He'll be a first. I can see he will definitely be a first rounder. So that guy, I watched him in the championship game against North Carolina, and it wasn't even fair.
Some of the projections for San Diego are actually showing Jalen Ramsey out of Florida State. Yeah,
he's a pretty good player. I could see him going pretty high. The question is who do you want more? Who do you think is a better player with a better upside? Is it Jalen Ramsey or is it Vernon Hargreaves?
I think with Hargreaves, he's a corner definitely, but with Ramsey, he's played corner and safety, and that versatility may be more what teams are looking for.
I can see that. I mean, it kind of depends on what you want. Baltimore, they're probably going to draft whatever injured Joe Flacco. They're going to draft him a new leg, a collarbone, or whatever he injured. I have no idea what it was.
Yeah, get him some transplants.
Yeah, you know, I mean, they don't have a lot of offensive weapons. I could see him going wide receiver with a guy like Quan Redwell.
Well, they have a wide receiver. He just hasn't played.
Who?
I thought they had a wide receiver. Didn't they draft a wide receiver last year?
They got Steve Smith. He was like 75 years old.
No, he's retired. Retiring. I'm trying to think. Let me check right quick.
I mean, they drafted Darren Waller out of Georgia Tech, but he's a project. Whoa! Whoa!
Can we not have that kind of language?
This is evolving really quickly. So bad.
Why the hate for Darren Waller? He's 6'6", 220, runs a 4.5.
That's the most useless 6'6", 220 I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah, he is kind of soft. I'm not going to lie to you.
So bad.
Black shaman.
Sharp like a paper towel.
All right, Dallas, I think this is where you see Paxton Lynch go off the board.
Really? You think they're going to take a quarterback?
Wow. Because I think they're about done and tired with Tony Romo, especially with him keeps getting hurt. And correct me if I'm wrong, but isn't Tony Romo like 33, 34 years old?
Yeah. And it was Perriman. Perriman, they drafted in the first round last year.
Again, not the Cowboys. You're talking about the Ravens.
Where's he? Where
talking about the...
Is he the one that went to Maryland?
No, he went to UCF and didn't play a down this year.
Oh, has he been injured?
Yep.
San Diego, I don't really – again, it's I don't know a lot about the Chargers.
I think
– yeah.
San Francisco.
You know that they're probably going to be in Los Angeles in the next couple of years?
I think three teams are going to be in Los Angeles in the next couple of years.
the Chargers, the Rams –
the Raiders.
No, the Raiders.
Nobody travels because everybody's in Los Angeles.
The Raiders.
You actually have an entire division of teams just in Los Angeles.
Everybody tried to move to Los Angeles.
Don't get it. They moved the Niners down, and you have the 4-team California division. All within Los Angeles. Followed immediately by both the Sacramento Kings and the Golden State Warriors, also moving to Los Angeles.
And then the L.A. Lakers and the L.A. Clippers, who have the California basketball.
You actually have all four teams playing in the Staples Center as their home arena. Which sets that you up for... That sets you up for some fantastic doubleheaders.
Oh, man.
Oh, yeah. No. Travel costs would be, like, ridiculous, by the way. Like, it would save so much money.
All right, back to the NFL draft. You know... It'll be interesting to see how stuff develops. There's some really good players coming out. Some pretty good offensive line that's always something that people like to put a huge premium on. In terms of the Arizona Cardinals, who will pick 32nd in the draft. And for those at home that don't realize it, it means they're going to win the Super Bowl. Mark it down. Go to Vegas. I told you to play the money.
You are 70% accurate, 70% of the time.
It works all the time.
I bet they're going with the quarterback.
Yeah, they're going to draft the kid out of North Dakota State, Camden Wentz.
Cool. I that's actually a good pick for them. Like, go get the heir apparent.
You can let him develop for a year or two under Carson Palmer and Bruce Arians, which is fantastic. He's shown that David Johnson come out and been a really good player at running back. You know, you're going to end up having to retire Fitzgerald, but you've seen a lot out of John Brown that you like. You've seen some good out of Malcolm Floyd. They still don't have a tight end, but I don't really care.
Yeah, I don't think they care either. You really think
There's a couple spots on defense that could probably use a little bit of work, but I don't know if they're going to be able to draft high enough to really get a good impact defensive player.
I'm not as surprised by the pick. I'm more surprised that you think the player is going to stick around on the board that long, because there are a lot of teams that need quarterbacks.
Yeah, but the thing about it is Wentz is definitely a developmental guy. He's not a guy who's going to come in. And I think the problem you're going to see is you've seen the success that guys like Mariota and Jameis Winston have had this year as first-year starters. It really is out of the norm. Normally, you don't see a first-year quarterback come in and have the kind of, you know, success being relative, because the Titans are still probably going to have the top pick.
But, yeah. Right. No, you're right. And the thing is, too, you're right. So, like, a Matt Ryan had success because he had a good running back. A Joe Flacco had success because he had that great defense and all he had to do was not fuck it up. So...
Wait.
I think, by the way, my Dallas, I'm going with Smith out of Notre Dame just because Sean Lee has a permanent bed in the hospital.
Yeah, that team is so ridden with injuries this year.
I don't know. Taking linebackers that high is always kind of questionable to me. Almost like taking running backs that high.
Yeah, you don't take running backs that high anymore.
Or if you want to screw it up even more and you take a tight end that high.
Who would do that?
No, I know. Andrew, I normally I'd be like, you know what, go fuck yourself, because I know you're talking about the Lions, but there have been three Pro Bowl caliber players taken after him. That was the stupidest fucking thing ever.
Are you talking about Ebron?
Yes.
Yeah.
God.
Problem with Eric, the problem is everyone nowadays is looking for the idea of we want Jimmy Graham, so you're looking for your flexed out tight ends more so than a lot of your on the ball inline tight ends. A lot of teams are just starting to stick slightly smaller offensive tackles out there as your
one
tight ends.
There's a consensus one top tight end in the league, and that's Rob Gronkowski. Jimmy Graham this year has shown us that he's just not that good, and he's definitely overrated. That's just
the main well, the thing, I don't think that Seattle's really utilized him the way that the Saints did. I think they've tried to ask him to do a lot of stuff that's really not his cup of tea. I mean, he's not a great inline blocker. He's not a great on the ball tight end. He's a guy you flex out to create matchup issues with a safety or a linebacker.
Yeah, I've always viewed Jimmy Graham as more of a like sneak out receiver kind of guy, but yeah. Well, we've got a few more teams I want to cover before we finish up. So let's just go through need and potential picks real fast. So right now we got the Bears at 9 for Thompson, who I'm sure is listening. What would be a good pick for the Bears?
Well, I mean, they need a quarterback, but again, there's really not a guy. Honestly, I haven't watched the NFL nearly as much as I have in the past. I didn't really pay that much to be outside of my fantasy team blowing balls.
They probably need a running back soon because what's his name is going to that tread has to come off the tires soon.
Forte.
I feel like Forte will be around forever.
The problem is, I mean, who do you take that high at running back? Even the guys like a Leonard Fournette or.
Well, you can't take Fournette because he's not eligible. But yeah,
right. Wow, you're right. I completely forgot that he's only a sophomore.
But yeah, Henry or somebody like that. I mean, they don't really match up for that system.
I mean, Zeke Elliott's a pretty good running back, but I'm not sure he's the one that you take that high. Plus, Elliott's going to have a bit of an adjustment and a learning curve, having spent so much time running. Out of the gun in that Urban Meyer offense.
What about the kid out of Florida State?
Is Dalvin Cook a junior?
I thought he was a sophomore.
Is he? Oh my gosh!
I think Dalvin Cook might just be a sophomore.
So many sophomore running backs that are so talented. All right, but let's throw out there they might need a running back. Okay, so for the original Miami six pack, let's talk about the Dolphins. What do they need?
They need to get rid of Dominican Sue's contract.
They need to hire an offensive coordinator who knows how to utilize the actually fairly decent weapons they have down there.
True.
You know, I mean, Lamar Murray's a pretty good running back. I don't think the jury's completely out on Ryan Tannehill. Now, I don't think he'll ever be a Peyton Manning, but he's got a chance to be a decently successful quarterback.
Yeah, you know? You're right. I don't. They had an identity though, like 3 weeks ago.
They have the identity of the fact that Dan Campbell will beat the crap out of you. Dan Campbell's gonna strap it up and hit somebody within the next two games. I guarantee it.
I think they need line help though. I think that way they can get to. They had an identity. They were running the ball, and they were passing it when necessary. So I think that is definitely a good identity for them. It was working.
So Ronnie Stanley from North Notre Dame, or like a Taylor Decker, Ohio State, big tackles.
Yeah, just some line help.
All right. Then we got Tommy's Bucks. Which I guess defense, I'm not really – they don't really need anything on offense. They're kind of stacked.
Yeah, I mean, unless you really want to find a partner for Mike Evans. But, again, I don't see outside of Laquan receiver is coming this year.
They probably need – I'm honestly going to go with defense on them, but I'm going to go line. Linebacker, I feel like they're pretty good. Their middle linebacker is one of the best in the league.
Gerald McCoy is a pretty good tackle.
I'm saying, like an end. They need some end.
This might be where you see Shaq Lawson come off the board.
Yeah, I can see an end for them.
And then the last team, and I don't know what to do with them. The Falcons, like
they'll probably be breaking in a new GM anyway, so. I mean, they need offensive line help. They need defensive help. They need Matt Ryan to figure out what's wrong with his head.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Devontae is a pretty good running back. They've got decent wideouts in Julio Jones. Now, you might want to look for a partner since, obviously, Roddy White's in the twilight of his career.
Roddy's good.
But Leonard Hankerson.
Greg Hart out of ECU is doing pretty good in limited action right now.
Yeah. He'll
probably make a much better push here next year once he's been in the league a year.
I think an interesting wide receiver to look for next year, maybe not in the first round, but is a guy like Quinshon Davis out of North Carolina.
I can see that. It'll be interesting next year. The draft next year, I think, is going to be one of the deeper drafts. I really do.
I don't know if it'll necessarily have the flashy names up top like we had this past year, but I definitely think it's a deeper draft.
Well, I think the key is when you're looking at positions other than quarterback, because a lot of the drafts in the past have been defined by the big quarterbacks who have gotten drafted. This one's got a lot of depth at the line and a lot of depth on defense, and I'm really excited to see those kind of things, even though people might not think of those as their first ideal picks. It'll be fun to see, that's for sure. All right, guys, do y'all have any other teams you want to cover real fast?
No.
It'll be interesting to see what New England does.
They always do well.
Yeah, I mean, they've built an offensive line so far this year where they've got two rookies at guard. They played a rookie at center most of the year.
I can never tell. If you want to talk about recruiting, they hit on everything, it seems like.
They fit. They get people for their system. They know who they are.
They know where they are. They know what they want. They're going to take the guys that fit. And I think they're willing to look at guys and give them chances. You know, you talk about a team starting on the offensive line. I mean, that's where it is. They plug and play in running backs for the past 2 or 3 years. You know, Tom Brady's been the constant. Gronk's been the constant. You know, they've had a Welker or an Edelman or an Amendola type receiver. But if you look, they've never really had a big-time wide receiver on the outside. I mean, they even tried when they brought in Randy Moss, and it didn't really work.
Well, then it worked with Randy Moss. I think Randy Moss got outside of himself. And the thing was, they picked up Randy Moss for like a fourth or fifth-round pick or something.
Yeah.
You know, also, by the way, remember, New England does not have a pick to the second round this year.
I mean, they would have traded their first-round pick for more first-round picks anyway. It's pretty much their MO.
True. Well, I think they've been holding on to them more often, I think, because now with the first-round picks, actually, with the rookies coming in on the actual scale,
I think the way the rookie contract scale is probably one of the best things that's happened to the league, because you don't have a guy in as a league being the highest paid player position anymore.
Oh yeah, definitely. And that was the thing that really, you know, not to bring up my Lions too much, but that's what really screwed the Lions. Everyone's like, well, they're getting first round picks, but I was like, that was right before the rookie scale got put in place. So you had a lot of people like Ndamukong Suh being one of the highest paid defensive linemen in the league, which, no offense to him, he was a good defensive lineman, but that was probably what sped up the debacle with him leaving so soon, because when you come in and the guy's locked in for 4 or 5 years, you don't have to worry about negotiating a contract till it's time to do so.
Well, I mean, plus you had Matt Millen that never saw a wide receiver he didn't want to take.
Sure.
All right, guys. Well, that's definitely a topic for another day, possibly another podcast. But anyway, thank you again to our listeners for joining.
Quick shout out!
Shout out? Go for it.
Great win for your Georgia Tech Yellow Jacks basketball team last night. They knocked off Virginia Commonwealth University. If you really want to watch some fun basketball, though, watch a VCU game. The way they play pressure defense is awesome.
Nigel, you got anything?
No.
All right. I think I'll defer this week. I think I'm going to have something to talk about next week with the bowl games coming up. Anyway, that's going to be it. Thanks to our listeners. Congrats to Navy for winning the cup and another dominant year. And to all of you out there, have a great rest of your week. Try and make it through. Christmas holiday is only 1 week away. Have a good one. Good night. And I will always love you.
I'm gonna go play with you in just a minute when I get off the phone. When I get off here.
You better. better play the greatest Whitney Houston song ever produced.
I just want to dance with somebody.
God damn right. Who doesn't want to dance with somebody?
Exactly. Even if, that shit is my jam.
Even us goofy-ass white people want to dance with somebody.
Okay, good night. Good night, everybody. Good night, everybody.